You're listening to the Beat Your Jeans podcast, where we discuss real-life situations to find what we need to do to find happiness. So listen in as I, Nate G., your host, talks with Dr. Doug Lyle, an evolutionary psychologist, about life, love, relationships, and most importantly, finding happiness in the modern world. We are live on Wednesdays at 8:30 to 9:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And if you have any questions or comments, maybe even a complicated situation that you'd like some advice on, feel free to call us live at 657-383-0751 or email me at beatyourjeans@gmail.com.
Hi there, Olivia. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm good. I'm calling because I have been sort of having some interpersonal issues that I think that you could shed some light on.
Okay.
I currently live at home. I currently live with my dad, and we are in a situation where it seems like we can't find a way to communicate, where we keep missing each other in terms of like the message that the other person wants to receive. And I keep telling him that the way he's speaking to me, I don't think it's respectful. I don't think it's okay. It's not kind. I think it's abusive. And he keeps telling me that I don't appreciate the things that he's been doing for me this whole time. That being said, I mean, I've finally gotten to a point where I think after so many years, I will be moving out in a few months. But in the meantime, I need to figure out a way to coexist with this person under the same roof and not get sucked into argumentative conversations that, you know, it's like very clear that he will come and try to create a conflict or cause an argument about something that is, to me, I guess, sort of like it's very clear that it's a non sequitur, that it's something that he's trying to pick a fight about. And like, how do I get out of that when his primary intention is to suck me into a debate about something? And I feel like I fall for it every single time. And I, get emotional, and then I start to defend my own position. Like, how do I get outside of that cycle? Because it feels, like, very, very difficult. And every time I try, I seem to not be able to do it correctly. And if you had any insight about that, I would really appreciate it. And would be willing to give you more information if you have questions or anything.
Right. So what I like to do usually is I like to a lot of times if we explain some basic, essentially the instincts of the human, so if we explain what it is that they're up to, then sometimes the solution will essentially sort of start to reveal itself, okay? So let me explain a little bit. There's probably some different things that are going on. But there's one fundamental thing that seems like it's probably sort of the top level organization of what's happening. And this is going to be what I call a vicious cycle. So let me explain the difference between a vicious cycle and a virtuous cycle. There are two different ways that human interaction can take place. So when it's in a virtuous cycle, people are essentially reinforcing and giving each other positive feedback. And when they're in a vicious cycle, they're actually chopping each other down. And there's reasons why this happens. Both of these mechanisms are instinctive mechanisms in people. And so I'll give you an example. For some reason, I get examples in my head, and then it's the only example I can use for about 3 months. And so this is the example that I've been using here for the last month, and unfortunately, it's probably going to go on for a couple months before I come up with a new one. It's about 20 years ago. I was hanging out in a girlfriend's apartment, and she happened to watch reality television, which was really disgusting to me. And so the relationship was not long for the world. But it was a new thing in the world. It was MTV or Real World or whatever the heck it was. Anyway, intermittent with this was an interview on Rod Stewart. And so it was all about how great Rod Stewart was, which is fine because I like Rod Stewart. And then I heard they chirped in little chirps of an interview with Elton John. And Elton John was saying how Rod Stewart was, I quote, the quintessential rock and roll voice. And then Rod would say great things about Elton, and then he clipped to Elton saying great things about Rod, and around it went. And to me, I was like getting disgusted with the whole thing. But that stuck in my mind later on when I sort of formally was thinking this through. Now, I want you to think about, from Rod Stewart's perspective, if Elton John says that Rod Stewart is like this greatest rock and roll voice, I want you to imagine that how valuable Elton just became. So it is now in Rod's best interest to tell the world that Elton has exquisite judgment. Okay? In fact, it's in Rod's best interest to convince the world that Elton has the best judgment in the world about rock and roll voices. Okay, that's actually what's in Rod's best interest. So when Elton says something very flattering about Rod, Elton just became more valuable to Rod. And not only that, it is in Rod's best interest to elevate Elton as much as possible. This is a virtuous cycle. Okay? Now I want you to imagine that had the interviewer interviewed Elton, and Elton said, well, I actually think Rod's kind of overrated, but I think I've met, 100 voices at least as good, but hey, he got lucky with Maggie May, and sometimes the breaks are the breaks, and he turned it into a great career. Well, at that point, Rod is highly motivated to undermine Elton's credibility as a judge of voices, okay? So he's very likely to say, well, Elton doesn't know himself from a hole in the ground. He exploited the gay marketplace in soft pop, and then he got politically correct behind all that, and then he got, he's really not that great. He's overrated. Okay? So then we have a vicious cycle. Okay? So now it goes the other direction. So it's going to turn out that very often this is exactly what you're going to see. And in fact, the entire concept of rapport. So when some guy goes in for a job and he interviews the person, he comes out and he's told by his coach, oh, you have to get rapport. Well, the coach doesn't know what rapport is. They don't have any idea what they know what they can see it, they can feel it, but they don't know the cause. The cause is that each individual winds up being seen by the other as an asset to their own esteem. Okay? So rapport is a reciprocal mechanism. It's a virtuous cycle where I see that elevating you is in my best interest, and then you see that elevating me is in your best interest. That's rapport, okay? And that's exactly who it is that hiring manager is going to hire. He's going to hire somebody with whom he has, quote, rapport, and he's not going to hire somebody that he doesn't feel the rapport with, i.e. that he doesn't feel like that individual is going to bolster the hiring manager's esteem in this company or with some other situation. So you and your father have a vicious cycle happening. And so you say that he comes up to you with a non sequitur. In other words, he's just coming up to pick a fight. And he's going to be criticizing you. What arguments are is arguments are the heart of argument is actually a vicious cycle when it comes to the esteem flow that is taking place between two people. If two people disagree, but they have enormous respect for each other actually, and they don't feel threatened, like their own esteem is threatened by the other person's contradiction, then it's not an argument. It's actually a discussion. So it's like, wait a second, I didn't think of that. That wasn't the way I was thinking about that. Tell me more what you're thinking. That's how people act, and that's actually how they feel. Okay. But when it turns out that the quote discussion winds up being that one party essentially is not only contradicting the other party, but the nature of the contradiction and how it is that they go about it is indicating that they are attempting to lower the status of the other individual, then it tips this into what we call an argument, and you can feel it. Okay? You feel that they are actually trying to reduce your status. Now, reduce your status how? Well, it's going to turn out that arguments between two people are not usually between two people. That in the Stone Age, what would have happened is that these arguments were actually taking place in front of half a dozen other people in the village. And so the other half a dozen people in the village were not really that interested. They were bystanders. They know everybody. They're tracking the little flow of status and contributions in the village. And if we've got two people that clearly have a conflict and they're starting to argue, there is some degree of interest in the village in this, but the degree of interest is relatively modest. So as a result, they don't have a lot of time to drill down through the details about who cheated who or who's right about this or that, okay, or who owes who what and who lied about this and that or the other thing. They don't really want to listen for too long. As a result of the lack of patience or interest that the third parties have in this situation, it's going to turn out that human beings have evolved argumentative instincts. And those instincts are all of the bizarre rhetorical capabilities that humans have for cutting to the core and hitting the other guy where he's vulnerable in an argument. So we make this into an art form. That's what a presidential debate is. Okay. We also make it into if you ever saw the movie 8 Mile with Eminem, they made it in these rap contests. They made that essentially an art form as to how it is, can you cut the other guy to pieces and hurt his status in front of the group? How creatively can you do this? And people are so good at it that some people can do it poetically and in meter, for God's sakes, okay? So
I'm an English teacher, so I totally know what you're talking about.
Okay.
Sixth grade English teacher, very proud of that.
Yes, okay. So it's going to turn out that what's at stake here is how fast can you checkmate the other person's argument, appearing to be logical and fair, but actually cheating in any possible way that you can, and essentially cutting the feet out from under them very, very quickly. And it's also useful to show that you're angry because you're indicating to the other people that are watching, including the other person that's listening on the other side, that they are being unfair. Okay, so that's a signal of unfairness, and anger is a mechanism that is designed by nature to signal that one has been unfairly treated, and therefore one is due a concession. So the whole purpose of anger is to try to activate a guilt circuit in the person on the other side. This is a universal human characteristic, and it's very dangerous to have people angry at us. So that's why it's actually exceedingly easy to police if they haul somebody to a police station and they're very angry with them as they insist that they believe that the person is guilty. It is exceedingly easy to get false confessions. Okay, the police don't know this, but it turns out that it's very clear, the evidence is very clear that this is true. And that's because it's much better to admit that you are guilty of something that you're not guilty of and not get kicked out of the Stone Age tribe than it is to stand your ground. And then if it turns out that the village really believes you're guilty, but you're insisting that you're not, then they smoke out that you're not honest and you're not trustworthy, and therefore they kick you out of the group. Okay? So human nature has algorithms that have run the cost-benefit analysis on this. And so it's very easy to tip people over into false confessions if you're insistent and angry enough about it. Now, so these are all part of these sort of rhetorical tricks, arguments, argumentative instincts, etc. And so your father sounds like, you know, he's no day at the beach in terms of personality. So my guess is if he's acting this way, this is an inherently quite disagreeable human. So agreeable, how agreeable people are, how pleasant and reasonable they are, is actually a function of genetic variation. And so people, if you plot this on a bell curve, it's just like their intelligence. So there's people in the middle, half the people, you know, most of the people are sitting somewhere pretty close to the middle. Then there's people that are very argumentative, and there's people that are extremely pleasant. So if you think about the concept of, quote, agreeable, and why this is the dimension that we found in personality research and why we call it that, it's because people that are agreeable, very agreeable, they agree. Okay? Where would you like to go to the movies? Oh, I don't know. Well, how about if we go see the movie about the cats and the dogs? Oh, that sounds good to me, i.e. agreeable. Okay, do you want to go to Mexican food or Chinese? Well, wherever you would like. Oh, let's go to Mexican. Okay, that's fine. That's an agreeable human. And a disagreeable human says, where'd you like to go? And you say, and would you like to go to Mexican? And they say, no, I don't think so. Okay, so, you know, the Monty Python movie, The Knights Who Say Nee, out of the Holy Grail, is perfect for this. Anybody that knows this movie, it's like King Arthur says, can we pass in your forest? And there's about a whole bunch of these guys riding around on horses that say, nee, 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 i.e. no, no, no. Very disagreeable, okay? This is a natural genetic variation in human nature. And so it sounds like your dad is sitting somewhere probably in the upper 25% of the distribution in terms of being disagreeable. Maybe he's in the top 10%. I don't know. I'd have to talk to you about him. Here is history. Here are how many jobs he's been fired from, how many employees he's had that he fired, and you know what I mean, how many arguments he's had, and how conflictual his life is with everybody in and around it. But you can estimate that for yourself and look at him vis-a-vis an average guy on the street in an average conversation with his average daughter. And then you tell me where it is that we think he stands. My guess is he's what, upper 20 percentile for disagreeable? What do you think?
I would say, well, okay, so this is the thing. For me,
yeah.
I would say like in the tens, because that's what I see from him. Now,
yes.
There's now this situation because, like, I would say that a lot of his friends that I have like a good rapport with, his friends
mm-hmm.
even admit to me that they believe he's like pretty disagreeable.
Right.
So I know that it's not just me, but like
right.
whatever amount of disagreeable he is around the public.
Yes.
It's like way increased behind closed doors completely.
Right.
So there's a lot
yes.
of this posturing in public.
Right.
And then
yes.
as soon as I'm at home, it's like he could say one thing and then completely reverse that position right away as soon as – or, like, he could say to his friends, like, I'm so proud of my daughter. I love her so much. And then all of a sudden he gets home and it's like, I can't stand you and your disappointment to me and you don't love me, like, right away. So
right.
There's that element
right.
of it too.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that I see that. He's got enough intelligence and conscientiousness to sort of mask the process that's going on and also to probably to blunt some of his harsher edges in order to protect his standing in the village as reasonable. So he's probably solidly in the upper 20th percentile for disagreeable. And that means that, in principle, what this means is that he usually is not going to see things fairly. So someone who's at the 80th percentile for disagreeable, they kind of think that when it's about 70-30 their way, that feels about right, okay? That feels like it's an honest 50-50 deal. If you're sort of in the middle of the graph, you feel like a 50-50 deal is a 50-50 deal. And if you're sort of at the bottom of the graph, if you're a total sweetheart, you're an extremely agreeable person, then when it's 70-30 against, you're kind of okay with it and it seems reasonable, okay? So these are just genetic variants on human beings. And so your dad is sitting up there. We're going to call him a 70-30 trader, which means he's probably somewhere in the upper 20th percentile of the distribution. That's probably about how bad that gets up there, which means very often he is asserting that he's right, they're wrong, this is what's fair, et cetera, and there's disagreements. Now, he's not so outrageously bad that he doesn't have any friends at all, but the bottom line is that he's not easy to deal with. Now, with somebody like this, it's exceedingly likely that a great many of their relationships from time to time will be caught in vicious cycles. That's because they'll get pushback, they'll get criticism, they'll be attacking someone else's value in order to enhance their own in some competitive process. And so we will start the vicious cycle. Elton will say that Rod isn't that great after all, and then Rod will have to hit back. And then we start the cycle, and then it's sometimes very difficult to get out of it. If you can imagine the Jews and the Muslims, you can imagine that this is a vicious cycle that is unbelievably difficult to stop. Okay, so this is a vicious cycle that can go on for 2,000 years and just keep being reborn in every new brain that comes up in one side of the river or the other side of the river. So this is now what we're going to do is we're going to try to fix the problem. And the way we're going to try to fix the problem is we're going to do something that's going to go completely against the vicious cycle. We are literally going to slam on the brakes, and we're going to shove the car into reverse, and we're going to back up instead of go forward. Okay? So this is a what I would suggest that you do. And if you do this, the whole idea here is that you're going to give this one hell of a shot. Okay? We are going to do this essentially as well as it can be done, or at least to the best of my knowledge, as well as this can be done. We're going to do it this way, and we're not going to do it half-assed, and we're not going to do it 90%. If you would, this is obviously your option to do this, and you're going to listen to this, and then you're going to think about it.
No, I'm listening. I'd like to know what it is.
Got it. So understand that what we're going to try to do is we're going to stop the vicious cycle, and we're going to reverse it. Okay? And the way we reverse a vicious cycle is we're going to shove it and push it into a virtuous cycle. And so I'm going to explain essentially the underlying evolutionary mathematics as to why it is that this essentially never fails. Okay? So I say essentially because I've never actually had it fail in my face clinically. In other words, when I'm actually in the room with a couple of people that are in a vicious cycle, I've never failed. Okay? But that doesn't mean you couldn't fail, and certainly one could fail if you wobble and drop the ball. You know, we can hand you the ball, but you can fumble it anyway. All right. So I'm going to step you through this to give you the best possible chance of executing this. And if for some reason this doesn't do it, then at least you have the peace of mind as you go forward that you knew that you did everything that you could reasonably possibly do to give every chance to get this thing better. Okay. All right.
Okay.
So here's how we do it. This is called flood the circuit, and it turns out I go through this on my website, Esteem Dynamics. It's one of the audio files that I have up there. I explain it in about 7 minutes or something like that. So that you can, those are the Cliff Notes versions. So we'll step through this in a little more detail than I do there, so that you understand what to do. What we do is we're going to set them up a little bit. So we're going to set them up by saying, you know, Dad, you know, I really want to meet, you know, tomorrow. I just want to talk. I just want to have a little time. It won't take much. I really want us to talk. I've got like 15 minutes. Okay. Is there a time when you can spare me 15 minutes? Okay. So he'll have to agree and hem-haw, and he'll bitch about it or whatever he does. Doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
We just say, look, that's all I want. I just want 15 minutes. Okay. So then when we get to 15 minutes, you know, we give them some tea, you get some tea, you sit down, you say, okay, listen, you know, I just have some things that I want to get off my chest, and I just want you to listen, and I don't want you to interrupt. Give me a few minutes, and then you can respond, you know, after I'm done. But I just have a few things that I really want to say, okay? And, oh, he'll have a little struggle with that, but he'll choke it down. Right. And so now he is set up because he feels like you are ready to criticize him. and he thinks that you are going to, you really thought this out and you're really going to, you know, you're going to really give him relatively fair and highly defensible to the village, critical feedback. Okay. And so he knows now he's in for an argument, and this is, he's getting all ready. Okay. And this is what we're going to do. What we're going to do is we are going to actually flood his esteem meter with the most concentrated dose of positive feedback than he's probably ever heard in his life. Okay. So the times when people get extraordinarily concentrated doses of feedback, there's really only one time it happens. And that's when they're falling in love with somebody. So somebody that is falling in love with them has rose-colored glasses on and is extremely motivated to look at all different aspects of the person's physical and psychological being, and they will flood them with all kinds of feedback about how wonderful they think they are. Okay? That is the time in a human's life where they get the most intense, diverse, positive feedback that they ever get. Now, an actor getting an Oscar is basically told, you did a really fine performance in, you know, Hello, Dolly, okay? So you're a great actress, and we think you're a great actress. But that's not saying that we love their character, that we think that they're sexy, that we think that they're, you know, a fantastic person and creative and intelligent and imaginative, blah, blah, blah. No, that's not what it is. You're a great actress. Here's your award. Okay? So even though it can be extraordinarily gratifying to get public recognition at that level, it's not the same thing as falling in love. Falling in love is the most diverse, complete set of positive esteem signals that one will ever get, and the most valuable, because you want the esteem from that individual more than anybody else on earth. Now, close would be your daughter, okay? Parents absolutely want to have the respect and admiration of their children and love of their children, and vice versa, all right? So it's going to turn out that very often in close relationships can tip into vicious cycles. And the reason they can tip into vicious cycles is because that individual on the other side, if they're criticizing us, they hold more cards than anybody else in the village. They have more in-depth knowledge of us than anybody else in the village. And so if they start criticizing us, they could criticize us in front of the village, and the village would give them very high credibility on that criticism. So you can do extraordinary damage to somebody's reputation if someone close to you, husband, wife, child, father, anybody that gives very negative feedback that's close to you is potentially holding a tremendous threat over you. So if they do and you think it's unfair, your feelings are going to be hurt very badly and you're going to want to strike back, and then we can start a vicious cycle. Okay? So this happens often in husbands and wives when they're heading towards a divorce. Everybody starts butchering everybody else's reputation because for the simple evolutionary mathematical reason of the Elton John Rod Stewart situation, that if my soon-to-be ex-wife starts telling everybody that I'm a shit husband, then my only option is to tell everybody she's a shit wife and she doesn't have any credibility. And so now we wind up in a vicious cycle. Okay, it's horrendous when it's in front of their children and they're angling for the judge in divorce court. You know what I mean? And for it's just horrendous. But anyway, this is what happens, and I tell people to stop it and to shift the cycle the other direction if we possibly can. In your situation, this is how we spin a virtuous cycle. So we have him sat down, and he's defensive as hell, and he's getting ready, and all of his argumentative instincts are getting ready to pick your argument apart, and he's thinking he's going to try to stay silent, but he knows he's going to be ready to interrupt you as soon as he's got anything to contradict you with. Okay? So instead, what we're going to do is we're going to shock him with an extraordinary flood of positive feedback. That positive feedback will not be unidimensional. It's going to be multidimensional. It's going to be talking about essentially all different aspects of his personality. and even his appearance, for God's sake. If he has an appearance, what you're going to think about before you do this is you're going to think about anything that he thinks about himself where you believe he has pride in it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So whatever that is, his big muscles, his tattoo, his ponytail and his hair, his pinky ring, you know, the fact that he, you know, killed three people overseas and people, nobody knows about it. I have no idea what this guy might be proud of himself about. Okay? But whatever it is, you make a list of what you believe he's proud of himself about. And you make a list of what it is that you might in principle be proud of him about. Okay? And anything on there that you can choke out an honest or legitimate positive feedback, we're going to use it. And the way we do this is we're going to do it what I call attribute anecdote. So we don't just go into our teacher and say, or your girlfriend and say, I think you're a great person. I think you're a great person. No. You say, I think you're a great person. I saw how well you treated that homeless guy on the street. That was so unbelievably kind of you, i.e., we say the anecdote that matches up with the attribute. The attribute or the adjective that we use to describe the person is an overarching a summary judgment that we have made of their character, i.e. you're intelligent, i.e. you're conscientious, i.e. you're reliable, i.e. you're a flake, i.e. you are agreeable, disagreeable, you're a jerk, etc. Those are summary judgments, okay? So what we're going to do is we're going to give them very positive feedback, but as we give them the positive feedback and the adjective, we then quickly tumble into the anecdote that supports it, okay? And we may use one anecdote, or we may use two, or we might even use three. We don't need to use more than that. There's a reason why we do this. The reason why we do this is that if we say you're so gorgeous. You know, God, every time I walk into a room, I see guys looking at you. And it just makes me feel proud. Boom. Okay? Now the guy has given his wife the anecdote that it supports the adjective. Okay? Now, why do we do this? Because people have an intuition about other people's psychology. And the intuition is if you actually believe in the global summary attribute that you are saying of me, then you must have evidence for it underneath, okay? If not, you're just saying something flattering to try to manipulate me. So the little bullshit meter perks up out of people's heads like they've got my favorite Martian little antenna. And it perks up in their heads. You're too young to know what my favorite Martian is, but it's a long story. The bottom line is anybody over 50 knows, of which none of them are listening. Now, bottom line is that people have got very fancy antenna to feel like to know when they're being flattered. But if it turns that you then very quickly spill into an anecdote, then that suspicion that they're being flattered starts to go away. Because it feels like what's happening is that your mind is actually organized with those judgments of them in it. And then the reason why you've even arrived at that summary judgment is because you have observed these instances, and those instances are literally located in memory right underneath that summary judgment. And so as I'm saying things, it's spilling out of it. Oh, and then I can remember the time we were on the ship and that handsome guy up there kept asking you to dance, and you kept saying that you were with me, and he kept doing it anyway. It's like it was just amazing, okay? And then I remember the time when you were in the silver dress at the Christmas party, and nobody could take their eyes off you, and I felt so proud. Boom. That guy just gave three anecdotes to support his summary judgment, okay? He must think I'm beautiful if three anecdotes just stumbled out of him. He couldn't possibly have rehearsed this. The human mind never would make that inference. Okay? So, with your dad, we start with something and about something that, you know, the truth is I know we've had our troubles and I know that we've had struggles. But the bottom line, you know, as I get ready to move out of this house and move on my own, you know, there's some things that I you know, it all starts coming to me as a big deal, and there's some things that I really need to say. And I just have to tell you how incredibly proud I am of the fact that you are so such and such, whatever that is.
Okay.
You know, the time when you did this, I was 16 years old, and this and that happened, and you stuck up for me, and et cetera, boom. And then I remember the time when such and such happened. Okay, and you know what? And then remember the time when such and such happened, as if it's spilling out of you spontaneously. Okay?
Okay.
And you know, I also wanted to tell you that I really appreciate this also about you. Okay? And okay, we spill it out again. Okay? Like I whenever we went to open house, I appreciated how my dad, I don't know, is he tall, short, fat, strong? Tell me anything about your dad physically. Average. Tell me anything about him. Average build. Yeah.
He likes to work out, I guess, though. So yeah, maybe that's something.
Is he in decent condition?
He's very proud of the fact that he cares a lot about his health, and
cares a lot about his health.
No.
Yes. But
yeah,
you know what?
This
is beautiful.
Health, so I might
that's
just
great.
Say something like that.
Sure. So you could say, you know, the truth is, I'm actually proud of the fact that you really care about your health. You know, I've got friends whose dads smoke and drink and are falling apart, and I know that they're just headed for a wreck and they look terrible. And I see people on the street that I know are probably your age and they're probably younger than you, but they look older than you. Okay? And it's like, you know, this didn't happen by accident because you got the conscientiousness to take care of that. And I can remember a time when I was talking to this little guy and he looks like he was falling apart. And he said, gee, well, for, you know, I think I'm doing okay for 50. And I thought, Jesus, that's my dad's age, and he's in a hell of a lot better shape than you. Okay?
Okay.
So we spill things out just like that. Okay? And we go down through this, and we hit about 5-6 points.
Okay. So, like, different,
yes,
a lot, like
yes,
more than four.
More than one or two. That's right. So we're going to go down through about five or six different attributes about him, okay, that you have valued over the years and that you have seen and that you admire, okay? Now, as we're doing this, remember, you're going to have to, you should probably type this out and read it over and over again and edit it, okay, until the point where it comes out like a soliloquy. Like it's just been like you're on stage in a Shakespearean play. Did you ever see Jaws?
Yeah, I did.
Did you ever see the movie Jaws? Yeah, you did. Okay, I can't remember.
Yeah.
Robert Shaw, I believe, was the old seaman, the old sharker.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
Famous actor. All right? Now, you remember, if you remember, he's on that boat with the two of the other guys. And he starts talking about the USS Indianapolis and the sharks in the water, et cetera. That was phenomenal. That was a gripping soliloquy that went on, I don't know, I timed it once. It was like a minute and 50 seconds, okay? It was chilling. You get done with that, and everybody in that audience and those other actors are looking at this like, shit. Like, we just heard this guy's soul and his memory and the horror of this, okay? Well, of course this didn't happen. It's a friggin' actor, for God's sakes. But that actor probably spent a week getting ready for that soliloquy. And he does a brilliant job of it, and you remember it for all time. Okay? It's an important little pearl on a string of that movie that makes it a classic. Okay, now, didn't happen by accident. Somebody wrote it. Somebody edited it. Shaw edited it. He practiced it. Like, this is no freaking joke, and they probably did it 17 times to get the one that they wanted. Now, you're going to only have one shot, okay? So you better practice, and you're not going to practice 5 times. You're not going to practice 10 times. You're going to go through this little 3-minute scenario, 3-4-minute scenario. You're going to go through this, like, 20 times, okay?
So you would not recommend doing this like trying to do this anytime soon. Like wait
no.
And
wait another
think
wait
about
2 weeks.
It and practice it.
Yes. because you will edit this little file over the next 2 weeks, and you'll change it and you'll modify it, and then it won't sound quite right, and then you'll think of something else, okay? And you are going to be cooking and cooking and cooking and cooking up. You're a Hollywood scriptwriter, and you've got not much, okay? You got about 600 words, not a lot. This essay is meant to actually reverse a vicious cycle between father and daughter that's just terrible, right? So there's no way he can do this. This is outside of his capabilities. The only person that can do it is you. You can do it. He can't do it. Now, if you do this and we flood this on him, there's some things that could happen. Number one, you could start crying. That's fine. That doesn't hurt this thing at all, so don't worry if that happens. Okay? Number two, he could start crying. That's great. That tells you just how much cognitive dissonance he's in over how bitter and hurt he is that he gets negative feedback from you.
I don't see that happening, to be honest.
What's that?
With you. I think I might cry, but I don't know if he'll cry. I don't.
He
think,
may
I
not
think...
cry. It depends on who he is and what he's like. Okay?
He's not a crier. He's just not.
Yeah. May very well may not, but what he might, but you will see emotional reactions that will be bizarre, okay? He will be puzzled. He will be pleased. If I read this guy correctly, as you've described him, this is what I call a sunflower, okay? This guy needs the sun of positive feedback. If we shine the sun on him,
that's
his sunflower
true.
Opens up, and he just can't get enough. Okay?
Yes, absolutely.
This is what I call the narcissist test. Okay?
Yes, he is tried and true. Absolutely.
Yes. Right. So when people are narcissistic, i.e. highly disagreeable, which is what this is, then what happens is when we flood their circuits, they really can't get enough of it. Now, when you flood the circuit of someone who's just in a vicious cycle and they're moderately disagreeable and they're all upset and hurt and everything else, if you overdo it, they aren't upset or feel manipulated. They actually feel bashful. Okay? You felt it yourself. You felt it when somebody gave you too much credit and you actually wanted to almost turn away and say, no, that's not true. Okay? No, thank you, but no, I didn't really deserve that much credit. That tells you that individual that feels that is not a narcissist, okay? Mm-hmm. You get a narcissist, you start flooding a narcissist like this, and mostly if you do this, I'll watch them myself because I'll do it to check them out, and it's like, oh, you can't get enough. I know
that does help me kind of answer the question, though, because I've always been really paranoid because I grew up with a narcissistic parent. I was always, like, worried that I would myself become a narcissist, but now you've helped me realize that I'm not because I don't take compliments very well.
Right. So you're not a narcissist.
At least
not only that.
That paranoia.
Yeah, you can't become a narcissist. You're either born one or you're not. Okay, yeah. So these are genetic, and so it's all about where you land on the agreeable, disagreeable dimension. So your dad, he's probably solidly up at the 90th to 95th percentile, actually. Pretty narcissistic. And as a result of that, he is so pissed off that you're not worshiping the ground that he walks on. And he is very upset about the fact that you give him negative feedback, and therefore you're likely to give negative feedback to the tribe about him. And you're likely to have high credibility because you're in tight to the situation and you're behind closed doors. So you can report with a credibility that other people don't have. So as a result, you are a threat to his status in the village. Okay, so he feels that. And so what he needs to feel, if we're going to repair this relationship, is that you are not a threat to his status in the village, because in fact, in your deepest, darkest, most truthful heart, after all the hurt and the bitterness and some of the conflicts, the truth is you admire the hell out of him. Okay?
Can I ask you
that's
a question?
What's that?
What if I have made some choices?
Mm-hmm.
In hindsight, that were not good, where I've actually kind of broadcast the fact that he's not, you know, kind of how he is to the village, quote-unquote, right?
Yes.
And that he, you know, now it's like oh my gosh, convincing him that I'm not going to do that is going to
sure.
be kind of
That's
a hefty challenge.
It's really not as hard as you think, because the truth is that that's why we open this up by saying, you know, we've had our conflicts, and I've had negative feelings about you, and you know, I've had negative judgments about you, and I know I've had those things, and that's part of our history. It really is. But you know what? Now that I'm getting ready to move out, and I'm getting a little older, and I'm getting a little bigger broader perspective, the truth is that I'm actually very proud of the person that I see that you as X, and then we start. Okay? So what his nervous system is going to do now is, this is Elton John telling Rod Stewart that he's a great voice. It's going to turn out that Rod Stewart has no choice. Rod Stewart has to say, let's suppose that they had had a tiff for years. For years. Okay? That they'd been in a vicious cycle. And then Elton comes out one day in an interview and says, you know what? The truth is, Rod and I have had troubles in the past. And, you know, we had some rocky times, and it's hard out here in rock and roll. But the bottom line is that I think that Rod Stewart is the quintessential rock voice of our generation. Okay, what is Rod going to do when he hears that? I love you, man. I love you, man. You're fantastic. That's what he's going to say. He doesn't have any choice. He is under evolutionary logic that says, I now need to elevate Elton as fast as I can. So when you do this to your dad will not be able to help it, okay? He will want to tell the world, gee, Olivia, can we get this on videotape? You know what I mean? Because I want to play this to everybody. That's sort of, he's not really thinking that.
Yeah.
What he's really thinking is, she's going to be saying these deep, positive things about me to other people. Okay, she's just bared her heart to me, and it wasn't easy for her because he knows you've been in a vicious cycle. Okay, so now for some strange, mysterious reason, this has turned. Something has happened. She has a new perspective, i.e., there's about to be a change of life that's significant. And for some reason, this is shifting her perspective, and it's big on her heart because we're under a lot of tension, and then boom. You come at him with the virtuous cycle, okay? You do this well, you do it credibly, you practice it, and you give him a Robert Shaw soliloquy, okay? And
okay.
3 minutes and 40 seconds later, your relationship has a complete new window of opportunity, okay? That's
yeah.
how fast
okay.
this works, okay? So that's how we do this, and if we do it well, he should be like it's a shot of heroin. It's like, oh, my
mm-hmm.
God. Like, what a relief. This is fantastic. Oh, I love you, kid. Oh, da-da-da-da-da. Let's all go out with my friends and celebrate. See what I'm saying?
Yeah,
this
right.
is what this guy's going to be feeling. And we just ride this. Once you've spun things into a virtuous cycle, it's not impossible to keep them there for a while. Okay? Now, we've got a disagreeable dude, et cetera.
Yeah.
So we recognize that. And we could talk
yeah.
about that another day, you know, but our first thing is to clean up the biggest mess in the living room, which is that we're in a pretty tough, a vicious cycle, and we need to reverse it. Okay?
I totally think that's something I'm going to do, but it further kind of complicates things when
– yeah.
I feel like so the whole thing is like, I think that when you're identifying that there's a vicious cycle,
yeah.
it's I see now how it's working, because anytime I've ever been reinforcing, he's taken
yeah.
that reinforcement and tried to like change my kind of control. He's very controlling, right? As
yes.
a narcissist would be, and so
sure.
so then his impulse after like a flood as you're describing.
Right.
is
right.
like, oh, I am like master of the universe. I can control like every, and as I'm moving out, I'm trying to make decisions
yes.
for myself about like where I'm living
yes.
and what I'm doing. And he's his ultimate goal, and I can just tell you that right now, is to have as
mm-hmm.
much control over that process as possible. And I know that by reinforcing him, his instinct is going to be, okay, now I can really, like, dig my claws in and really tell her what to do in this situation. So how do I keep up that flood and change that dynamic instead of just reacting,
what we're
like,
do,
no, Dad,
we're
I don't
say,
want to do that, you know?
Yeah, what we're going to say is, Dad, the greatest gift you could give me, okay, you gave me the greatest gift that you could give me, which is you gave me a good brain, okay? So I got lucky and I inherited a good chunk of your intelligence. So in the same way that you have good reason to have a lot of confidence in your own judgment, because you do have a lot of confidence in your own judgment, and I'm proud of the fact that you are not intimidated by other people and that you hold your own opinion, you know, in high esteem. And it doesn't matter what the odds look like or how many people disagree with you, you hold on to your opinion. And I totally admire that, even though it's upsetting to be on the other end of it, but I actually admire the daylights out of it. Okay? But the truth is, Dad, I didn't just inherit some of your intelligence. I inherited some of that stubbornness too. Okay? And so what I'd like you to do is give me the chance to make a few of my own mistakes. So I'll listen to what you say, and you're probably right because you've lived longer than I have and you've seen more than I have. But sometimes, you know, kids need to fall down if they're going to learn how to walk. Okay? So, you know, I'll listen, but I want you to understand that sometimes if you say to do go left and I go right, it isn't because I disrespect you. It's because I have to learn about my own judgment and I got to find out my own limits. And that means I'm not always going to do it the way you say, but I'll always listen.
Okay.
That's how we do it, and we try to get out of it as best we can.
Okay. That's okay.
Does that make sense?
That's a really good response, actually. Never thought of that one before.
There you go. All right. Well, listen. I have great appreciation for you bringing a real-life clinical problem to our show, and I think that this was a really good one for other people to be able to listen to, and so that hopefully thousands of people with similar variants on, you know, types of problems will be able to use learn how we drill down through this technique and how we essentially engineer it to optimize their chances of resolving, you know, very difficult problems just like this one. This one is a tough one. I know what personality is on the other end of it, and I can also tell that you have enough steel in you that it's brutal to be in the face of that because you're not a natural wallflower. You're somewhere solidly in the middle of the bell curve in terms of confidence in your own judgment. And so this is a very tough place to be. It's a strong wind to be in. But we're just going to learn how to bend a little bit in the wind kind of cleverly and hopefully patch this thing up so as you go on and you have some distance between you, this is what I call the disagreeable distance. We have to, with disagreeable people, you know, we need a little distance. And so I think your life's headed in a real good direction, getting some distance.
Thank you so much for your feedback. And I definitely... there were a lot of things that you hit on that were very weirdly on point, and I will be working on my soliloquy in the next couple weeks here.
Okay. You know, feel free to give Nate or myself feedback. Just let us know how it goes, and I'll be glad to take a few minutes and look it over. That I got a lot of confidence in you. I believe that you can do a great job.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
You bet.
That's it for this evening. Thank you very much for listening to the Beat Your Genes podcast. If you'd like to call in with a question or comment, we are live Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, or you can go ahead and email me with any questions or comments that you have at beatyourgenes@gmail.com. Feel free to listen to previous episodes through iTunes or through blogtalkradio.com/beatyourgenes. So if you've heard something interesting, please share it with your friends, discuss it on social media, and maybe even write a review. Thanks for listening. This is Beat Your Genes, an evolutionary psychology podcast for finding happiness